And then he says, but he who seeks the glory of the one who sent him is truthful, and there is no injustice in him. Did not Moses give you the law, and none of you observe the law? So he's accusing them, of not observing the law, all of his critics. And then he says, why do you seek to put me to death? Now, they call him crazy, but for accusing them. Who seeks to put you to death? But later on, they do seek to put him to death. They weren't able to lay a hand upon him because it wasn't yet his time, St. John says at the end of it. But in seeking to kill our Lord, which was their clear intention, they're not even keeping the law of Moses, because the two precepts of the law of Moses were the love of God and the love of neighbor. And Jesus is God and neighbor to them at that point. So he can accuse them, you know, sort of in globo, all of his enemies of violating the law of Moses. So I do think there's a connection there. He's the new Moses. Mm-hmm. He's kind of just like he was the greater than Solomon. He calls himself that in St. Matthew. He's also the greater than Moses.
And a little later in the same gospel, he makes the argument again for healing on the Sabbath and makes the reference to circumcision and how.
Yeah, you could circumcise on the Sabbath if it was the eighth day, because you're obliged to circumcise the child on the eighth day.
Yeah.
So he's showing the hypocrisy of these people who were all pharisaically scandalized at miracles being worked on the Sabbath. All right, so anything else before we go to Wednesday?
No.
All right. The secret talks about making God holy our minds and bodies, and that's not the only proper in this week that makes that reference, that we be sanctified in mind and in body. So,
oh sure. Well, we could dissect every sentence and go into it in great.
Well, my point is that's a very Lenten thing. Since we're doing some bodily penance, then you know, we're mm-hmm. talking about sanctifying the body as well as the soul. Okay, so Wednesday it is. We get an introit from Ezekiel, which is going to come back to us, I think, in one of the lessons. So this is Wednesday, and we've got two lessons from the Old Testament. Right? Am I right? Yeah, we've got the lesson from Ezekiel, and then we've got a short lesson from Isaiah the prophet. So what leapt out at you?
Well, this is the God giving us a new spirit, pardoning our transgressions, and that new spirit comes up twice. And I love this line, you shall be my people and I shall be your God. So he's remaking us. This is part of the remaking process of Lent.
And of course, all of us who have already been baptized, we can constantly renew that.
Mm-hmm. But for the catechumens, it was going to be a big remaking.
Especially when they hear the beginning.
I will pour upon you clean water, exactly. And you shall be cleansed of all your filthiness.
Yeah, a clear reference, an applied sense of the... But by the way, Ezekiel the prophet has lots of water in his prophecy, and he ties in a lot with St. John. If you read the prophecy of Ezekiel and the Gospel of John sort of in parallel, I'm not saying they're written in parallel, but what I'm saying is a lot of the themes of Ezekiel show up in St. John's Gospel. So it shouldn't then surprise us that the gospel reading for the same Mass comes from St. John.
Which is being born blind and now having sight, which would be a reference to faith.
Yeah, a reference to faith. And even in the context of baptism, which, you know, the catechumens are looking forward to.
The spittle on the eyes and ceremonial.
It was called illumination. So in the early church, one of the names for baptism was illumination. In fact, I think this is the main word that the Armenian Rite Catholics call it. The Armenian Christians refer to it as illumination. But they're not the only ones. It was used in the Greek church and so forth to refer to baptism as illumination. So the man who's born blind, that's a very long gospel from the ninth chapter of St. John. It's one of my favorite gospels because it shows you how stupid our Lord's enemies are, because they keep trying to nail this guy who's been healed so they can cast him out of the synagogue, and they keep asking him, and he finally says, well, what? Why are you asking? I've told you this stuff. Are you going to be his disciples? And then they scream out, no, we're disciples of Moses, right? So, you know, picking up on the theme that yesterday, they weren't really. They didn't even follow the law of Moses. I love it at the end of the gospel when he's been, this is where his illumination comes in. So he's been illuminated literally in the sense that his eyes were open. Jesus put his spittle in the mud and made clay and, you know, put them in the man's eyes and then told him to go to the pool of Siloé to wash out his eyes. Now, Siloé itself is an image of our Lord because it means sent. And our Lord is the sent one. He's sent by the Father. So he washes his eyes. Now he can see. And then at the end,
after he's been questioned by the Pharisees,
after he's been put through the gauntlet, he goes to, and they even bring in his parents and like, is this your son? Yeah. Was he born blind? Yeah. Was he healed? Well, we know that's our son. We know he's born blind, but we
ask
don't know
him.
How he was healed. Ask him. He's of age. And then they bring the poor guy back in again for a second round of questions. But at the end, we get this. This is the second illumination. Do you believe in the Son of God? Jesus says to him, so Jesus approaches him after the whole rigmarole is over with the bureaucrats. He says, do you believe in the Son of God? He answered and said, who is he, Lord, that I may believe in him? And Jesus said to him, you have both seen him. Hint, hint. He just got his sight back, right? You have both seen him, and it is he who speaks to you. And he said, I believe, Lord. And by the way, here liturgically, everybody's supposed to kneel. The priest will kneel, and everybody kneels. And falling down, he worshiped him. So the double illumination happens. A man's eyes are healed, and then he gets the sight of our Lord with the eyes of faith in the soul. So was there anything in there we're going to go back to with Isaiah's...
Isaiah is full of things, but...
Wash yourselves, be clean. Mm-hmm. Wash yourselves clean. So again,
though your reference. Sins be like scarlet, they shall become white as snow, the famous line.
Yes. So cleansing is a big thing. Cleansing and illumination is found a lot here. I like that the collect associates chastising the flesh with joy. Mm-hmm. We who are chastising the flesh by fasting may rejoice in this holy practice, and thus, with earthly passions subdued, may the more readily direct our thoughts to heavenly things. So it shows you that joy isn't found.
Oh, that's the second collect.
In hedonism.
Right.
Are we done with that mass, sister, or is there anything else?
Well, you'll see the happiness, and you see happiness and compassion. Deliverance, you see those themes also showing up. And then there was one other little theme, and that was the true health, tying back to the gospel. In the offertory, he has given life to my soul. And then in the secret, you grant us true health of soul and body. So,
mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, true health.
And then the post-communion is the spiritual nourishment that sustains us.
Yeah. So. Again, when you're fasting, spiritual nourishment, health of body, all those things have a renewed significance. So we're on Thursday now of the fourth week of Lent.
And we see rejoicing again.
Yeah.
Rejoice, O hearts that seek the Lord. Give thanks to the Lord. Invoke his name. Make known among the nations his deeds.
The Introit.